I misspoke yesterday. 15 people signed up to run for governor of Oregon in the May primary between three parties. We're not even supposed to have an election this year, but under Oregon law, since John Kitzhaber left before the middle of his term, we have an election to fill out the back half of that term. So incumbent Kate Brown is running for the Democratic nomination. Our next guest wants to represent the Republican Party in November. Dr. Bud Pierce is a medical doctor and oncologist in practice in Salem. He also teaches physicians at Oregon Health Sciences University. Dr. Pierce has never held elective office, but obviously wants to be governor. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
You got started early announcing in September. What's the burning desire here?
Well, I believe it's time for new vision, new direction, new leadership, and the Republican Party certainly needs some of its leader citizens to step forward. So I decided to go in early and to present myself to the state.
You mentioned at your announcement 30 years essentially without a Republican in the governor's office. What do you think that says about Oregon?
I think it says about talks about the Republican Party, that the people haven't left the party. It's the party has left the people and is not presenting ideas and candidates that people want to vote for. So I would never blame the citizenry. It's the party's issue.
Party just didn't keep up with Oregonians, you think?
It just lost its way. I talk about a legacy Republican Party, and the legacy party I'm talking about is Abraham Lincoln, freedom, unity, Teddy Roosevelt, which is square deal, fair deal, environmentalism, take on monopolistic businesses. Mark Hatfield really did a lot of great things, but a moral strength. And then Tom McCall, the environmentalist. You know, it's two of those four environmentalists. I think that's one real issue with our party is not embracing that we want a great economy, but we need to speak for a great environment.
So let's talk about the economy, because jobs is at the top of the list on your website. What can the governor do to bring in jobs and jobs that pay well?
So what the governor can do is accept the reality the private sector has to create jobs. And really, it's small business. And we give a lot of lip service to small business, but we give most of the benefits to Google, Facebook, Intel, and Nike. Not
big business.
All business shouldn't be helped. And entrepreneurialism is almost at an all-time low in terms of regular individuals going out, taking risks and chance of developing goods and services. So I would propose tax credits or tax breaks for the entrepreneur who forms a business so they are more rewarded. I would suggest giving some kind of partial loan guarantees to banks who push down money to people that are taking a chance so that they're more apt to loan money to these higher risk ventures. Again, focusing the efforts on true small business creation, because that will eventually give you medium and larger size businesses. And as a whole, as you have more prosperity, more people working, because even though we have a 5% unemployment rate, we have 1.5 million full-time jobs out of 4 million citizens, and 500,000 more part-time jobs, and around 2.83 million working-age citizens. It's full employment. It's more people working. It's new ideas, new innovation, new businesses, new goods, new services is going to take us forward. It's about the people. The people have to get you there, and government has to support that.
Among your materials, you talk about undoing regulations that you see hurting businesses. Can you give us an example of a bad regulation?
Well, again, I think that when you talk about the regulatory environment, so we'll talk about something as simple as medicine. One of the things that frustrates us in medicine is the differential, the regulatory environment that has led to greatly differential pay. So, for instance, if you see me in my office, I get $100 to take care of you. We have an environment that is set up that the hospital, if they own my practice, gets paid $150. And if you look at the way that we're able to access drugs and purchase drugs, it turns out that certain groups get to buy those for far less and use them and sell them for full price. When you look at waste disposal that we deal with in medicine, it's very cumbersome, and the paperwork process is very cumbersome. And finally, a lot of medicine right now, we spend our time documenting what we're doing and sending that information to the people who are regulating us so that they can oversee us, rather than them capturing the information that we're doing and telling us if we're doing a good job. So a lot of process we have to do to justify what we're doing and keep track of it. And those kind of things need to change.
You talk about wanting to cut taxes on low and middle income families. How would you offset the revenue loss?
Well, again, a calculation of cutting state income tax on maybe the first $20,000, I think it would come out on people of low income would be about $500 million. Again, if you look at growth of government each of the last two bienniums, you're talking about $2 billion in growth in the general fund, and four times that amount, or $8 billion, to the total all funds budget. So over the last 4 years, we've done $4 billion more into government. And the reason is the economy's gotten better and income tax brackets are not fully indexed. So isn't there a way for government to get more frugal? In my business, a 75-person business has done about $250 million of medical business over the last 10 years. We were frozen in reimbursement for 15 years. Frozen an absolute amount of money we get in for a service. You just have to figure it out. You had to figure out how to get leaner. You have to bring in administrators with the mission and the training so they look at what they're doing and they say, how can I do it in a more frugal way? And no, they're not going to be punished the next budget cycle. So if you say to someone, well, rather than telling me it's 5 to 10% more for your agency to function at this level, can't you tell me you can do it for the same amount of money? And if you say beyond that, we're not going to cut you that additional amount because eventually you want to use that revenue and that money to help the people in the whole state, including the private sector. Government has to get more frugal. It can't continue its pathway. It just cannot.
As I watch the Oregon budget cycle over 30 years, though, I mean, a lot of what you're doing is playing catch-up in one biennium because you had to hold the line in a previous biennium where the income dropped.
Well, the argument – so a couple thoughts on that. One is it almost seems that the purpose of our state is to provide income to the government to give us the programs that people in the government want to give us. That's really that mentality, what you just described me. And it is pervasive. I don't deny that. And the other thing is when times are good, government has to grow to catch up with what it did. And when times are bad, government has to spend more because the private sector is hurting. That is the kind of thinking that I'm just not going to get us to where we want to go.
Well, the demand for services does go up.
I agree with that. But then when times get better, you have to go the other way. You have to be willing to accept that. So, see, that's where you can have both ways. And it really comes down to people create wealth and prosperity. And imagine if we had 500,000 more full-time jobs. And say 2.5 million people rather than 2 million jobs. If we had that, we wouldn't have the social service needs because people would be anchored by their work. They'd be more prosperous. And again, that has to be the goal. And if you look at the kind of industries that we're losing by not supporting manufacturing that's done correctly, by not having a natural resource-based economy, the Senate just passed a bill, 85-12, that says that they'll trade off wind and solar for being able to export natural gas from America to Asia where they burn coal and biomass, which is horrendous. Those kinds of things, those kinds of practical compromises, if we can get there, we can have prosperous jobs here.
Dr. Bud Pierce is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Republican candidate for governor of Oregon. You can join the discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned natural gas. Here's Derek and Talent, I think, with a question on that very issue.
I'm hoping maybe I could find something I agree with you on, but perhaps not. So I guess I would like to know what your position was on the Jordan Cove project that hasn't gone away, although it's taken a setback. And then with your comment there on natural resources, I can probably read into your feeling of more natural resource-based future. So I guess I'll just take the Jordan Cove question.
Okay, well, thank you, Derek.
Okay, let me try a couple things. So the way I believe we should have a competent way to decide on what we're going to do, whether it be bottling water in the gorge, Jordan Cove, building a bridge. Competent countries let the local people decide if they want it or not, primarily. If they want it, over the next year, it goes to state and federal decision-making. If it's a good, it goes forward from there. And over the second year, you have legal and you have environmental. And then by the time 2 years are up, at any point in time, the project can't go. It's killed. It's over. People move on to think about something else. So projects can get done. You have to find something you can do rather than spend all your time on what you can or can't do. That way, people don't dig in and they end up just not letting go on either side. So I think that's the direction we have to go. Local has to accept it, and then it has to meet standards. But we need to speed up the process because when you spend 5, 10, 15, or 20 years on something, people make it their whole life, and that's a mistake. The purpose is to decide if a project can go or not. And if it can, it goes. And if it can't, it doesn't. Getting back to timber, which is where we're going to talk about natural resources probably, is that Oregon has lost less than 1% of its forests to deforestation since 1953. When we quit cutting down trees, the rest of the world didn't. They just cut them down. They don't replant. They don't take care of the environment the way we do. And if you look at things like cross-laminate timber buildings and cross-plywood buildings, and you can build a 50-story Portland high-rise out of wood, that's something that protects the environment against excessive CO2 emissions and such. So there's ways of doing it. We don't want any of our environment degraded, but if we just sit here and we don't want to use any of the natural resources we have or do any of the heavy work in Oregon, the rest of the world pollutes the world's environment and we don't end up with what we want.
So, for example, the BLM timber plan just recently announced they want to log more on BLM lands in western Oregon. The timber industry and the county say it's not enough. What do you think?
Well, the the reason they're saying that is they have an act from 1937 that says they can do 500 million board feet. That was the law. And then that got cut down to 100 million. And then the act comes forward and says now it's 275 million. The answer is rather than the federal government sitting in Washington and deciding what to do and then taking comment after they've decided, the real answer is bring the stakeholders to the table and try to get people to agree as you craft the legislation. And that's what I did when I was involved with liability reform. I had four doctors and four trial lawyers. And the doctor said, oh, we don't want to get sued. And the trial lawyer said, we like it the way it is. And what we ended up doing was agreeing on the principle of transparency, patient safety, report to the patient safety commission. And if lawsuits happen, we try to make it outside the legal system so the money goes to the victims. Agree what you can agree on and then write the statute or the law or the legislation together and then pass it, not what we're doing now.
Two state budget issues where PERS, Public Employee Retirement System, major issue because it'll take a larger bite out of the next budget in this biennium. You say fix PERS once and for all. How would you do that?
Sure. So the PERS problem is, well, a lot of our problem is we're run by a lot of the laws of dead people. People that have passed these laws, 60s, 70s, and 80s, are dead, and we're living under their laws.
Oh, well, the OMC Act would go in there,
so,
too.
Exactly. People of generations. So, one argument about sunsets. So this is what we're up against. We're up against a system that right now that required – we have invested money, $70 billion. 70% of the payout each year requires us to get a 7.75% investment return on the invested money. If you cut that, and that gives you a $21 billion hole that you need more money in the pot to get your your money back. Actually, if we look at a 4% investment return, it's not $21 billion, it's like $100 billion. So it's a huge number out there. So what the Supreme Court has said we can do is people who are retired now get what they got, absolutely, that we can – there's a money match formula for new retirees that retire going forward, and you pay them an annuity, a monthly income based on the amount of money they have. You can make it market-based. Currently, we pay 6, 7, 8%. Market rates are about 3%. So that would affect which formula the employees takes. You can start asking employees to pay some of their money that they're given as compensation into the system. The average around the country is 22% of the compensation that goes to a public employee goes into the system. Oregon's is frequently 0 to 6%. We can actually ask for more. And we're going to have to do some backfill. In other words, bring some money out of the general fund or other budgets so that the schools and the counties and such aren't killed. But I think backfill goes in the context of reform. And finally, to end it is clearly for newly hired employees, you get a defined contribution period. And that's just like we do in the private sector. And every year you should get a great salary, great medical care, great contribution system. And then the people in the future will have laws written by dead people that actually work.
The defined benefit.
Yeah, defined contribution. So you contribute. So that's the way you fix it so that the people who will write the laws now and be gone in 40 years won't punish the future.
Dr. Bud Pierce, how then, given the PERS impact in this next biennium, do you hold schools harmless or at least reduce the impact of the cuts on them?
Well, again, you look at the natural growth of 5, 10, 15% of revenue going into the government, it continues to increase. And again, what you have to do is you have to find ways, the way everybody in the private sector has to, and I had to do in my business, to make sure that you have the money for what you need to do. So you look at your school contribution, I think it was $7.5 billion this year. Let's say that if you can include education reform, which is a whole nother issue, you add more money, you can put more money into the system as part of that reform, and you make that the first budget item. You don't make it the last. You don't make it where you fund everything else and say, then we're going to use this bargaining chip. You say, if this is primary and we're going to do it, that's what we're going to do. So you look at the big three items. You look at education. You look at health care and health services, DHS and Oregon Health Authority. And you look at corrections and you say, how much money is coming in? What are our budget priorities? How can we frugal it down so more of the money can go to necessary programs and to the people rather than the process of government? The process of government, which when you talk to employees and you talk to people, there's lots of ways to bring more money out. There just is.
About 30 seconds for an answer to Amy in Ashland, who wants to know what you feel about raising the corporate tax within the state, corporate income tax.
So IP 28 is a hidden sales
measure to do just that.
Yeah, right. So it's a we view it on the Republican side as a hidden sales tax, and it's a multiplied hidden sales tax in that all the big entities that are involved in, let's say, producing a box of cereal add 2.5%. So it may add 7.5-10% to the final cost of the item. We believe that's a wrong way to go. That is not going to get us where we need to be.
So no increase in the corporate income tax.
We would not go with Measure IP 28.
All right, Dr. William Bud Pierce is running for governor of Oregon as a Republican. He is in the May primary. You need to register to vote by today. If you want to vote in the May primary, you need to be registered with a party, either Republican or Democratic, if you plan to vote in the presidential primaries. Bud Pierce, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.